Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When I was young, I'm the youngest of four. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, like, I knew what sex was. But I thought, yeah. But I thought you only did it to make a baby.
Oh, sure.
And I thought you only did it, like, one time to make a baby, and you never did it again.
Right.
And then I remember the moment I realized you did it for fun.
When you did it
for heard,
fun?
No, when I heard my parents having sex for the first time.
Stop it. Welcome back to...
Welcome back to Between the Reps.
I was like, wait, who are we? Between the Reps with Brooke and Gina.
Also known as, not talking shit, but all right. Gina, this morning, I was up fairly early.
Yeah.
And I was turning on. So I didn't realize, I mean, I've known for now a little bit of time, but for a while, I didn't realize that I get a Hulu account with a Spotify premium account.
Yeah.
And
I
so
just
I
realized
went,
that too.
Yeah. So I went on Hulu and I was like trying to see what was on there, mostly because I wanted to start watching Handmaid's Tales.
Oh, you got to catch up.
Yeah. So I'm going to start that.
So good.
But there was this documentary on Dr. Ruth. Mm-hmm. I don't even, what's her, how do you pronounce her last name? It's right here.
West. I don't know if we can even pronounce it, to be honest.
It's,
Westeyer? West.
Weistheimer?
Weistenheimer? Weistheimer. Westheimer. Westheimer.
Westheimer.
Yeah. Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
And so when I didn't know a lot, I didn't know anything about her.
Yeah.
And, you're not that. But I knew who she was.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Okay. And I also, because when I was young, I remember there was like a short period of time where I had like one of those like really small TVs in my room.
Yeah.
And I would turn it on sometimes if I couldn't sleep at night and she was on late night. And I always felt like so scandalous because she was talking about sex. You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of all I really knew about her. But she had a crazy, has...
Yeah.
She's 91.
Right.
Still kicking around. Seriously, still kicking in this video, in this documentary. I watched her walking in Israel, and she tells the camera guys to make sure they showed how fast she can walk. Fast.
She's fast.
She's like 4'7".
Yeah.
And if she hasn't shrunk at all, which, I mean, my parents both are shrinking, she might be a little smaller than that.
Yeah.
But she's had a crazy life.
Well, I just remember her back in the 80s. Like, she was kind of like the first person to, like, really come out and talk about sex. That I can remember. I think it was in the 80s.
Yeah. I mean,
when she was doing that, but it was just always so funny because she had that little accent and it was just like, I don't know why she seemed like an old lady then.
Well, she was.
I don't know how old she was in the 80s.
Well, she was born.
I'm not good at math.
She was born in 1928.
Oh, okay. So yeah. So she was still considered older.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, I remember her being this cute little old lady with this accent talking about
sex. They called her grandma.
Sex. Yeah.
Like as I'm watching this and they're showing like when she's like really starting to like become like a face, I guess, of sex for the U.S. or for, well, I don't know, the world, I guess.
Yeah.
But for U.S. was they were talking about and promoting and about your grandmother talking about sex. Like no one's ever heard their grandmother talk about sex like this before. And well, they really, really were saying they've never heard anyone talk about it like that.
Right. I mean, I think she probably got away with it a little bit easier, you know, breaking kind of through into that realm of like being able to talk openly about sex only because she was this cute little grandma lady. No, she was adorable. But yeah, I remember her radio, she had a radio station or a radio show. And we would be listening But my mom would always turn it. My mom wasn't that comfortable at all.
Oh, for sure not.
About us talking about sex. I mean, I'm pretty sure she only had sex 4 times to have my sisters and I.
Well, when I was just kidding. When I was growing up.
Yeah.
This is a little off topic, but I'm going to say it anyways. When I was young, I'm the youngest of four. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, like, I knew what sex was. But I thought, yeah. But I thought you only did it to make a baby.
Oh, sure.
And I thought you only did it like one time to make a baby and you never did it again.
Right.
And then I remember the moment I realized you did it for fun.
When?
When
you did it for fun?
I heard, no. When I heard my parents having sex for the first time.
Stop it.
Yeah. Mortified.
Gross. Gross.
Mortified.
No offense to your parents. Both quite attractive people.
I'm happy they're doing it now. Parents. I'm happy they're doing it now. But like I was young and I remember and I always knew when it was happening because they would close their door and they never closed their door at night.
See, I screwed up that way too. And my kids would know if we were having sex because I would close the door. Yeah. And I tell parents all the time now, I'm like, make sure you close the door from a really young age.
Yep.
Because my kids, like when they were in high school,
the kids out from
they
a young
literally
age.
One time came down and I could hear them at the end of the hall going, ew, gross, the door's closed. And I felt like I had to get up and be like, no, look, nothing's happening here, guys. Look, hey, Chad and I are just hanging out watching TV.
We were just wrestling.
Yeah.
Why are you sweating? I was watching Cops.
No, they were in like high school.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
It was horrifying. But yeah, oh, that's funny.
But so this woman... Yeah. Really it was like the first person to so openly speak about sexuality. And I mean, even still now today, I feel like it's just a taboo thing that doesn't need to be taboo.
Sure.
And she made it, she talks about how there is no normal. And like through the documentary, I mean, I just watched it this morning, but there's all these people that you kind of, she is introduced to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have tons of footage of like old shows and her old talk show she's been on and all this stuff. And there's all these people from like different backgrounds and, but they're just thanking her so much of like how she saved their life, how she changed their life, changed their relationships, their everything. And, you know, when in regards to like LGBTQ,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people were saying like so much thank you because when they were going through like the hardest time of their life, like she was someone who helped them through it.
Right.
And like understanding
and
things.
Like
a big thing was that there is no normal.
Right.
And she did that. She goes, there's no normal. It's like, you know, she just talks about just sexuality as if there, it doesn't need to look any sort of way.
Right.
We all just need to find a way that we all deserve to have it and enjoy it and understand ourselves and then find people that we discover new things with or try new things with, regardless of what that person looks like or whatever,
right.
You know, which I think is really fantastic. And a lot of footage of people being very angry at her.
Right. Well, I can imagine. Know? Sure.
Like very angry for being so vocal about it. And there's a specific clip where she's speaking at, I want to say it might be Cornell
uh-huh.
or like Columbia or something like that.
A school.
Yeah. And the clip is her as she's like finishing and she's walking off stage and there's these two men coming up. One was coming up to try and place a citizen's arrest on her. And the other guy is literally grabbing him by the shoulders and trying to turn him around and walk him off
crazy.
Stage.
That is crazy.
And
what was he arresting her for? I'm just curious. He just
literally just because
speaking about sex
because he was offended
forum?
By what she was talking about.
Oh wow.
And you know, and they
kind of start
just,
doing that to
they
people.
They kind of talk about like
they offend me.
Yeah. I'm placing you under arrest
right now. I'd like you
but
to
like,
leave the building.
You've got this woman who from a young age, you know, was living through the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And like she just.
She's a survivor,
you,
really.
Yeah. And you couldn't, you know, I can't quote it, but there was a part in the film that they talk about. There's not something that anyone could like say to like keep her from doing what she loved.
Right.
And like doing what she enjoyed doing and what she loved more than anything was learning.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I'm going to read this specifically. Her last memory of her father was the morning when the Nazis came and escorted him outside. And she remembers him just looking up, smiling and waving as he left. And basically her mother and she lived with her mom and her grandmother and they sent her off to Heiden, Switzerland.
Oh yeah, that's what you were talking about.
To an orphanage of a Jewish charity. And that's kind of where she grew up. And something that was like,
you were saying that the girls weren't allowed to learn. Yeah,
I can't remember
if
it wasn't the girls or it was like an age thing or what they just decided. But yeah. I remember, you know, she just wanted to learn and she remembered that her father had kind of told her like how important learning is. And there was this boy that she like fell in love with and they loved each other. And he was going to start going to school, mm-hmm. but she wasn't going to get to go. And so what he would do is at nighttime, he would hide under her bed and he'd bring all of his books and stuff home, right? And she would take them by the stairs where the moonlight would shine in and she would just read.
Right.
And so cool. He would stay in there until she came back and then he'd sneak back to his room.
Can you imagine? There's nothing like that happens anymore. Like, no. I can't even get my daughter to read for a book report.
I was actually thinking to myself, maybe I should read a book.
Yeah, I know. But it's like we just take those things for granted. You know, we have to like really remind ourselves that there was a time when, you know, you couldn't just grab a book and go read it or go learn something.
Yeah.
You know, and here I was like, I don't want to go to school. You know,
that's true.
So stupid.
It's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, she had a crazy life. You know, I was I needed to come to the office, so I didn't get to finish the whole documentary. But it kind of talks about, you know, where she was born, grew up, goes to this orphanage. Her parents leave to go to concentration camps, basically.
Horrible.
She finds out later, I think she was in her late 80s. They didn't say her age or when the video was taken, yeah. but it's her learning what happened to her parents.
Oh,
because when she had to change her name from Carola, I think that's how you pronounce it, because it sounded too Jewish.
So they encouraged her to change
it to Ruth, and that's her middle name. And she said she kept that because she knew that if her family survived and they came looking for her, that they would know that name.
They would find her, yeah.
Yeah. But she found out later that, you know, what years her parents died in Nazi Germany. But what was sad is they used a word about her mother that was basically saying she just disappeared. So there was no information about what happened to her or anything like that. But she just, I mean, her whole life went by and just in like the last couple of years, yeah. I don't know when they actually filmed this, but she finally had like some sort of closure.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. And you just watch her speak to people and, you know, one, talk about strong woman and being mentally strong, physically strong.
Right.
And dealing with so much adversity, not only, you know, because of her heritage and her family and where she's from, but then carrying on to, you know, learning and being educated in a time when women still, all, you know, not exactly
at home.
Yeah. Doing that. And then now she starts becoming more in the public eye and like talking about sexuality
are,
and things
yeah,
like that. And
taboo.
She has, there was this guy who was interviewed and basically her like coworkers or people that were, worked in like the hospital where she worked as well, already like talking about how they felt like she was reckless, you know, and in the way she was giving information and the advice she was giving people, she was reckless to be doing all of that. And it's like, and she makes a comment to the person who was interviewing her, and she was this beautiful female. And she basically says like, you know, I think it would be different if I were like taller, more beautiful and like sexy. Like people might accept it more from me.
Right.
And she was basically saying, because, you know, I'm this like older, like 4'7"
right.
tiny woman, like people wanted to
kind of shut her up.
Shut her up. And it's like, and I can see where she's saying that, but I also feel like, you know, as she's being introduced as like America's sex grandmother, like sex talking grandmother, like people find it endearing in a way.
Right.
It's almost like it, you know, coming from her.
Well, our country, everything's changed a lot too,
yeah.
you know, now that you have people like her that were the pioneers of going out and talking about stuff like that. So that kind of like laying the way for other people to feel comfortable, you know, talking about their sexuality. So
yeah. And even now it's
kind
still
of a badass.
Yeah.
I have to watch it. I haven't watched it yet. So I'm going to probably watch it tonight.
Yeah. If you guys are interested at all learning about Dr. Ruth, she is a amazing woman who's gone from being in an orphanage in Switzerland to living in Israel and joining the army, doing the training to be a sniper.
That's crazy.
And then just
that's
like
one then grandma you don't want to mess with
getting injured. I don't remember exactly how she was injured. She was in the hospital and met this doctor. Oh my God. I will say this. They go into the hospital where all the soldiers and everyone's at. They had no more beds. She said they put her, cause she was so small, in a bookshelf.
What?
Yeah. And she said that she had this doctor, this really handsome doctor that came up. And I feel like this is actually maybe her first husband or something like that. He comes up and she said that he was going to had food for her. And so she persisted to pretend like she couldn't feed herself.
So he would feed her?
For like 3 times a day, he would come and feed her. And he would feed her. And then she went on from there healing to, she said she was like learning how to like water ski and going snow skiing and like just living this like super amazing life and continuing to learn and do all these things. And, you know, she just, the whole time you see all this footage from her when she was younger and growing up and you see her now, she is so full of life.
Yeah.
It is really amazing.
And inspirational.
And very inspirational.
Yeah.
Very cool. If you guys haven't seen it, it's on Hulu. Go and watch it if you're interested. It's very cool. I learned a lot and you get to learn about an amazing woman who has had a life you'd only think you'd read about in a book.
Right. Fiction.
In a fiction book.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Since we're talking about it, what was your sex talk?
I haven't really talked about this.
Yeah. Like, I know that you said that you understood, like you heard your parents having sex,
mm-hmm.
but like, what was the actual talk? Because I think as parents, we always, like, I know I was always like freaking out, like, oh my God, what am I going to say to my kids? And I knew that I didn't want to do like what my mom did. Because mm-hmm. what my mom said was, don't have sex until you're married because it's like Jesus is in the room. And I was like, what? Always behave. And I understand what she was trying to say, but yeah, it wasn't the most effective sex talk at all. I mean, there was nothing about birth control. There was nothing about, it was just, don't do it. It's bad unless you're married. And it was like, okay. But as we all know, a lot of kids are going to have sex before they get married.
Yep.
So mine to my children was much different, almost to the opposite, to where it was like really probably not the best either. So I'll tell you after that, but I want to know about yours.
Well, the only memory I have of like a sex talk was, I'm the youngest. And my mom had Robin, my oldest sister, give Lindsay, my cousin, and my sister Lacey their sex talk. I remember we were at my grandma and my aunt's house.
She passed it on. That was smart.
We were back in my cousin's room and Robin was going to give this talk. And I was in there. And what was funny was like, I already knew all this.
Oh, okay. Like you'd heard it at school.
No, I had heard it from Robin.
Oh,
I was like the youngest sister that like my sister would tell me all this stuff and like gross me out at like a young age. And then I was the kid in like elementary school that like had all this information.
You were telling everyone else?
I would share it with people.
And then it's like that game of telephone where there's like, it's just getting a little bit screwed up every
single
time.
I remember there was this tree.
Uh-huh.
And like at lunchtime, we'd all go to this tree and that's where we would like share like sex information. Yeah. And then other than that, I remember like talking to my mom, like my mom trying to talk to me about if I was gonna finally have sex. And I like, it's like uncomfortable is like that conversation kind of felt. Like
right.
I always kind of talked to my mom about it. And before it had happened, I knew it was going to happen. And so like she had talked to me about it. I was in college.
Right.
Actually, so I didn't have sex until college. And I told her, I was like, I haven't done it yet, but it's going to happen. I'll tell you when it happens. And I remember it had happened and my mom was on the phone with me and she must have just sensed it because she just goes, did you have sex? And I can't like, I can't lie.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yes. And I told her, I was like, it was awful and it was painful and it hurt and like, she didn't, you know, I was obviously old enough, but my mom was just like, it will get better. You know, you just, the more comfortable you are with your partner and
all those things. Yeah.
XYZ.
Right.
Things like that.
Right.
But that was like kind of my experience. And then from a young age, I just always like knew because my oldest sister,
well,
it was almost like that was like her way of like picking
inevitable.
On me. It was like telling me things that are inappropriate. Thanks, Robin.
We used to do that to my sisters too.
I mean, she told me about it. I knew all about it, and I still didn't have sex until I was in college. So must have worked.
I remember it was, this is terrible. I think we made my youngest sister take a drag off our cigarette when we were like 16 so that she wouldn't tell
us. No, you did. You told me that.
Here, take it. She was young. She was just a baby. I mean, not really a baby. She was like, probably like, I don't know. I was 16. So she was probably like 10. Making her take a drag off my cigarette.
Oh my God. I always like saw those videos like in shows where like the kid gets caught smoking. So the parents like sits there and makes him smoke the whole pack.
Oh my God. No.
That's pretty funny though.
Yeah.
And then just get him sick.
Just to make him throw up. Or like when they catch him drinking, they make him like drink the whole thing. Yeah.
Get him really drunk, but then like take care of him. But like get him really sick.
But then take care of him.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate you and want to stay connected with you. So please rate, review, and subscribe to help this podcast grow.
And if you like the podcast, get the word out.
And now back to the show.
With my kids, I wasn't really sure how or like when to start talking to them about it. And like I've mentioned before, you know, Nico and I had, you know, kids young and not necessarily planned. So it was like really important for me to like talk about like birth control and all of that for them. And I just like tried to like make them feel comfortable about talking about sex from like kind of a younger age, you know, like kind of like flippantly saying things, like not making it like a super taboo thing. If they had a question, you know, I was having Ruby like when all the kids were like around 10. So like they had all sorts of questions about, you know, how you make a baby, how a baby is born. Mm-hmm. Kylie will tell you I drew lots of diagrams.
Nice.
And
all right.
Trying to explain her period to her. Yeah. So
tell the story about Kylie.
Okay. Oh man. Okay, Kylie, earmuffs again. So basically, as the kids were growing up, you would hear stories about other kids having sex or whatever. So one time I had dropped all the kids off at the movie theater, and while they're at the movie theater, I went to a local store or whatever, Killing Time, and the lady goes, "Oh, you know what's happening at the movie theater? All the girls are giving the boys blowjobs." And I was like, "What? I just dropped all three of my kids off at the movie theater."
Boys are pumped.
Great. Yeah. So I remember like I picked them up, and then, you know, I talked to them about it. I said, "Hey, it's, you know, it's been brought to my attention that this is happening, and I just want you to know that this is still sex, and you can still get diseases this way, and it's not okay, and it's not okay for boys, you know, to just..." I think I said, this is terrible, I think I said it's not okay for boys just to expect girls to do something without wanting to do something for them in return. Mm-hmm. You know, girls are not just like a waste receptacle, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was like more of like just a way of like saying, it was more to the boys about saying like, respect women, mm-hmm. you know, blah, 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 in my weird way. And so anyway, years later, Kylie ends up having sex with her first boyfriend, and she tells me, well, I ask her, and she goes, "Well, yeah." And I was like, "Oh my God." And so I'm like freaking out that mm-hmm. she's like had sex. And then I'm like asking her details. I'm like, "Well, did you do this to him?" And she's like, "Oh yeah." And I remember we're driving, right? And she's like, "Well, yeah." And I was like, "Oh my God." And I'm like, "I can't believe it." She's like, "Well, stop asking me." And so like, we're going back and forth, and I just can't help myself. And I go, "Well, did he do this to you?" And she goes, literally goes like this, "Well, yeah. I told him that my mom said that if a guy ever expected that he should be able to do the same." And I was like, "Oh, you said that?
21.
Like my mom said that?"
21.
Like in the heat of a moment.
Whoa. She's like, "Stops him. Whoa. I'm just going to let you know that my mom said if a guy wants this, then you better
sex,
be ready
better
to
be
do
giving
this
me oral
in
sex.
Return."
So, yeah. So I was like, wow. Okay. Well, I mean, at least she listens, you know, so that I was really proud
also,
of her.
I also second that. So I
was proud of her. Get yours, girl. But yeah, so she was just pretty horrified. And honestly, it's the same person that she's married to now. And that poor guy, man, we've put him through the ringer. I mean, I've said the most inappropriate things to him that probably, I mean, not inappropriate sexual things. That sounded really weird. But like weird things. Like when she wanted to like get on birth control or whatever, I was like, "If he thinks he's not using a condom on my daughter." And I remember he was washing his car in the back. And I went out there and marched out there, and I was like, "I don't like you guys having sex or whatever. And whatever, you guys can sneak around and do it, and you guys are adults. But you better not be putting your dick in my daughter without a condom on it. And he was just like, Jesus. So yeah, so that's been, mine's been more of like a trial and error, but you know.
And well, you know, let's say this too, not mean to like put you on the spot, Gina, but
yeah.
This could be, you know, take it or leave it. My sister was pretty vivid with me, and I also kind of had like a, I guess it wasn't necessarily taboo at my house. And my older two siblings were kind of rebels. So like.
They laid the foundation.
There wasn't a lot of taboo. There was a lot happening that at a young age I was watching and hearing and arguments and conversations. So, you know, and then like for you, you just got told, you know, God's watching in the room. He's in there with popcorn and watching. So that's weird.
And then I got pregnant.
And you got pregnant. At which age? 19?
I was 18 technically, but I turned 19. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I just think it's just better.
To be educated.
Yeah, I don't have kids. I don't even have a right to even say this,
no,
but I will
but
say
right. Yeah.
That because I'm almost 30.
Yeah.
It's just better to be open about it because I kind of grew up in like, let's say in an area of Utah and where sex conversations for sure, it's almost as if people want to not have them or tell you exactly what's going to happen or whatever, because they think that if they don't talk to you about it, then, and you don't talk about it,
right?
Then it doesn't happen.
That's not going to happen.
And it's like, well, no, it's going to happen. And I almost feel like nowadays, even like when I was like going to college and I was hearing about what was happening at the, like when my nieces and nephews were like in elementary school, mm-hmm. and like what they were catching kids doing,
right,
was already something that was way beyond like anything that was going on like when I was growing
right.
up. You know, it's like you just need to talk to them and have the conversations that are a little bit hard, but at least gives your kids, they feel comfortable, even if it's a hard conversation, they feel comfortable coming and talking to you about what's happening or what they're going through or what the kids are saying or whatever, because they know that they're going to get an honest response, but from a loving place and not from a, if you talk to them about it, you're just going to be grounded or get in trouble.
Right.
You know?
Right. I know. It's a fine line. Parenting is no joke, super hard. And it's like really hard to know like what you allow and what you don't. And, you know, you want them to talk to you, but then you don't want them to think there aren't any consequences. And yeah, so it's really hard driving that line. And, you know, sometimes I've come out figuring it out. Sometimes it's gone really bad. So you never know.
Riggs is pretty tough to talk to about sex.
I can see. You just have to keep telling him to stop licking his pee-pee.
Well, you know what it is? I think he keeps licking it. And also, I've made him so confident in the fact that he has a ball sack with no balls in it that he shows it to everyone.
First thing he does, runs up and he's like, hey, check this out.
No balls.
Yeah, just right on my back.
Hey, I'm no threat here. Zero threat. However, you know what he does?
Sorry.
I was getting some PT, some body work done, and I had him with me, and they have like the office dog.
Uh-huh.
Is this beautiful Rottweiler.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he's a puppy.
Rottweilers. Yeah.
So beautiful and mm-hmm. big. Well, you know, after my session, like you want him to meet Riggs? And I was like, yeah. And so Riggs does his move.
Yeah.
His move is he gets really close and he like kind of, you know, hunches down and then just rolls to his back and opens his legs up.
Showing his goods.
He's opened his eyes. He was sleeping. Yeah, I'm talking about
he's
you.
He's so embarrassed right now.
And I already am a little bit on guard because this is what he does. Riggs will lay there with his legs open, and as the dog starts to smell his area,
mm-hmm.
the dog knows how to get what he wants, because then the dog starts licking his penis.
Ew.
Yeah, it's really gross, like always.
Get a room.
But then what Riggs does is he'll start showing his teeth and growling at the dog. I'm not kidding. So Riggs is on the ground. I have him on a leash. He's this big-ass Rottweiler puppy. Is like smelling his area and he keeps doing it. And I'm like getting a little bit nervous because I don't know what the rot's going to do if like Riggs starts kind of trying to establish dominance as he's the one on his back. Looking like a little boot. And so as it starts happening, I just start pulling him. So I'm like dragging him
on his back. With his legs
I'm dragging him across the floor trying to get, and I'm telling him like, get up. stop being, get up. And he won't. He's just on his back and the dog keeps smelling him. And I'm like, I'm talking to my, PT. I'm like, listen, he's going to start like growling. And he like shows his teeth and it's what he does. It's like, it's really scary. It's like, he opens up his legs and goes, open for business. And then like bite your head off. I mean, his teeth are like little tiny teeth.
Yeah. He doesn't look that like vicious.
No, but
ever.
You do that and it's like, you don't know what you're asking for from the bigger, badder dog.
He doesn't know. He just doesn't know what he wants.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Sometimes you don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't know. Anyway. Well, I think that's about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time, you know what we should talk about? We'll have Katie on.
Uh-huh.
And let's talk about toys.
I don't know.
We'll have a segment where we talk about when I took Katie to go buy a vibrator.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Okay. We can talk about that. Also, we've been reading some of your emails and there was one that was really fun. I think her name was Veronica. Oh, I don't know. I kind of wanted to say who it was. Anyway, she was asking if we still do
challenges.
That's what it was. Oh no, here it is. Valerie Simone. She's like, hey, ladies, love the podcast. In the beginning ones, you guys did class challenges. Not sure if you still do them. I have one for you, Ariel Silks class. I would love to hear you both talk about that experience. Well, Valerie, it's funny. I was walking to Brooke's office, and there actually happens to be one of those class. It's like is it for classes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So they have Ariel Silks classes like right around the corner. So we may actually end up doing that. And I'm going to try to do it without hanging myself. It's going to be really bad. So thank you for writing in.
All right. So as promised, we said we would ask, answer a couple questions. Ask and answer.
Okay.
Gina, what's your favorite workout from Barks 25?
My favorite workout. That's a good question.
What do you love to do?
If I don't go to the gym? Well, if I go to the gym, if I'm doing like a CrossFit workout, I love EMOMs.
Yeah.
I really do. I like those a lot. And I'm not that competitive, and then I can just like take my time if I want.
Yeah.
Which I know.
I could take a minute off.
Yeah. It's a minute on and a minute off. But I don't know if I'm out, I like bike riding. But like my regular bike, like I'm not like a cycler.
Yeah, but we did talk about I have my bike.
I would like to start maybe doing something like that, just because I need to do more cardio and I can't run, and I've tried running since breaking my foot and it still kind of hurts, and I hate the ass bike. But I do like being outside, so I think I would like to do that, or like hiking or something like that.
I think what I'll
do
is
do more of that.
I'll take this bike I have off the stationary because that's really for when it's raining or it's wintertime.
Yeah,
and we'll go for a ride.
Yeah, I would love that. How about what's your favorite workout? I feel like they want to know yours.
What's my favorite workout? Well, it depends on how I'm feeling that day. Sometimes all I want to do actually is go for a hard bike ride I'll go running.
Yeah. You do like that.
When I want to like be able to accomplish a lot in a little bit of time or a little bit of prep, and maybe I don't really want to go into the gym or I don't want to have to like do all the setup.
Yeah.
Sprints or just a long run is great. And you don't need to do a lot. You can just leave from your house. And then I like riding my bike a lot.
Yeah.
Other than that,
You do Tabatas a lot.
Yeah, I like Tabatas.
You'll put together like a little.
And also, I actually like chippers. Like chippers because I love that when you, on a chipper, you like chip away at your workout. So it's usually a bunch of different stations or movements or whatever. And kind of once you complete one of them, you move on to the next one and you don't come back.
And you don't go back. Oh, yeah.
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 One of my least favorite is, not necessarily my least favorite, but like, I don't like when I don't know how long I'm going to be doing something.
Oh, right. So like when it's for time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, if I'm on a movement, cause I've done this like with my coach where I'm not in control of the time, he is, and you basically have to work until the time is up or until he says you're done. And so you're just doing reps. And so it's hard for me as like, if I know exactly how many reps I need to do,
then
I can like mentally do that. Even if it's like a lot, it's almost like I can push through it. And also I kind of prepare myself with a plan of like, how to attack it.
Right. Like how many reps I'm going to do.
But if I never really know how many I'm doing, it's hard for me to like, to know how hard I should be going. Cause you know, you don't want to like blow up or go out too fast or whatever.
Right.
What are your must haves? This is from Chelsea Raylan. What are your must haves for traveling, from packing to actual day of travel items?
Hmm. I feel like we pack pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a short trip, we always like to just do carry on, mm-hmm. which is nice. But then you have to have like all the travel size crap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a pain. Essentials.
Curling iron.
Yeah. Curling iron. Most places have a hair dryer.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta have your hair product.
Yep.
You gotta travel with a buddy that can pack half of it.
Yeah, we do. We're like, all right, so did you bring this? Cool. Yeah. I'll bring this.
So you're not both packing it?
I like to have face wipes.
Yeah, face wipes for sure.
And especially if like maybe
the face masks are nice to have.
Yeah, the face masks are super great. And they're the ones we have from Athea.
Uh-huh.
Athea Skin have amazing face masks. They are single packed. So
yeah, my daughter does the she wears the under eye ones on the plane, which I thought was so smart.
Yeah, I've seen people do that.
Yeah, and she said that it was so crazy that by the time she got there, they were like little like dried up, like that's how much moisture it's sucking out of your face.
Oh wow,
like they dried up.
We should try that next time we fly.
Yeah, we should just do the whole face mask.
We should.
Scary.
We should.
Hannibal Lecter.
You sit down.
We have two Hannibal Lecters in aisle G.
And then other than that. Usually snacks that I can have on the plane.
Yeah.
Either single serve protein, like ready to go. So you can just add water if you have your shaker bottle, or protein bars. And then I like to have, I like snacks. So like veggie chips or things that I are kind of not guilt free, but I know they're better than
what they're going to give you on the plane for sure.
And, and that depends too, just like on what, how long of a travel day you have. But something we like to do is as soon as we get to town, if we aren't like a super tight schedule, is to go straight to the grocery store and kind of get a bunch of things that we can have, you know, when we're at the house or the Airbnb or the hotel.
So we're not making bad choices last minute.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do one more.
Okay.
What? Hallie Lehman, have you had lip fillers or Botox? Both.
Both.
I haven't had any fillers put in my face at all in a really long time. I just got Botox done. I do like...
I have mine on tomorrow.
Yeah. I have... It's preventative Botox, and they don't do a lot, and we only do it in the area because I'm very expressive, so where I'm like really, really strong. Like for instance, my left eyebrow is like a lot stronger than my right, and I raise one eyebrow a lot. And so... the like wrinkles I'm getting and like even like overdevelopment of muscles in my face are much bigger on my left side than my right. So we kind of do that to sort of tone them down a little bit and try and keep my face look equal. Also what I noticed, and I asked the doctor, I was just barely with, on like right above my brow across the middle of my forehead, I'm like, sometimes I look in the mirror like in a certain light and I can see that like, it almost seems like it's, pushed out further than the top of my forehead. And he said, well, yes, you have really strong muscles right there between my eyebrows.
Oh, okay.
And like we're your like frown area or your like scowl area. And he said, so
frown lines.
Yeah. So he's like, you know, those are so working really hard. So those are going to become more developed than like the top. And I'm like, well, I don't want to look like a Neanderthal. So he basically like, that was really his only, that area. And then right above my left eyebrow was like all he wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good, like if you're interested in all, just going to a doctor who will tell you no, for one.
Yeah.
Who will say, and also don't be scared to tell him the things that you're wondering.
Right.
That's their job. And then they can look at you objectively.
Yeah.
Right word. And tell you exactly what they would recommend. And the goal is to not change your face. The goal is to.
Yeah. If a doctor's like telling you like, oh, you should do this and this and this and this, and it's all things that you don't naturally have, like, does that make sense? Like,
yes.
If you're trying to make yourself look like a different person or like look like somebody on Instagram, like I had a girl come up to me one time and she was like, do you think I should put filler in my cheeks? Like everybody has like these really defined cheeks. And I was like, no, like you're beautiful. Like, you don't need, everyone doesn't need to have like the cookie cutter face, no. Like the exact same face. So if you're trying to like prevent aging, you know, I mean, honestly, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Well, and it's,
but
it's, yeah,
if you're,
and it's not
for us, it's just about preventing.
Well, and for
the aging
and
process.
For people, they're like, oh, well, aging is a natural thing. And it's
sure.
Like, well, yes, it is.
It is.
But it's just aging with grace in a way. You know,
yeah,
they talk about when you like find a good doctor too, they talk about, you know, all the areas in your face where we have like collagen and like fat and things like that, and the areas that as we get older it just decreases a ton.
Yeah,
you know, and some people are just gonna, it happens more than others.
Yeah,
you know, and so the goal with like when you go to a really good doctor, it's to those areas in your face where you might be losing more volume than other areas, it's just to help with that, to keep you looking like you.
Right.
It's not to change. And they're, you know, they have a lot of new options. Like for instance, the injectable, it's called Sculptra. It's just something that actually gets your body to produce
its own collagen. Yeah.
And so you're not just putting in a filler that will, you know, once it's in there, like depending on who put it in, you know, can look good or look bad. You're actually just injecting something where your body can actually just create its own volume.
Right.
And it's longer lasting.
Right. Well, because I had some taken out.
Yeah.
So that's why we say, you know, make sure that you go to a doctor that's going to tell you no. Because my normal doctor, I hadn't gone to her, and she would always, I'd go in, I'd go, well, do you think I need this? And she'd say, no, no, you don't need that. No, 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 no. And I had already done a little bit of filler under my eye, and I went to another person and I said, it's been a while. Do you think I need more filler under my eye? And she goes, sure. And just did it. And then remember we had like two different people tell mm-hmm. me like, oh my gosh, she overfilled your under eye. So I had it all dissolved. So it is important.
And we'll tell people, why would you put filler under your eye?
Oh, well for me,
they get sunken in.
My eyes get a little sunken in. So like you get that really dark circle underneath. And so sometimes they'll put a little bit of filler, or if you get like bags under your eyes, they'll put just a little bit along the bone
to kind of fill up
and it
area.
Kind of fills it up and it kind of flattens it out. So I had that dissolved, but probably going to put it back in.
By a better doctor.
Just not that much. So Anyways, very, yes. Very smart to go to not just anyone, go to someone that's going to do just the bare minimum.
Yep. And with that, the whole, like aging is a natural thing and we're all aging and, you know, we know that that is 100% true. And that's why it's important to be with someone who can help you just continue to, you know, look a bit more youthful, especially if genetically for you, you know, areas of volume in your face are going to decrease faster than, you know, they should be or at that age or whatever. But it's the goal is to look your age, but not look like
a plastic
yeah. doll, or look like someone completely different, or just do too much. And even on that note, if you like that,
you
look,
like that, fine.
That's
and
fine.
And you know what? If you don't want to do anything to your face,
that's
you're beautiful.
Fine too.
That's fine. You don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways,
get off that soapbox.
Yeah, we're okay. Done. I have to pee.
Good to know.
I really have to pee.
Okay, guys.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to our ramblings. We appreciate it.
Remember to
rate, review, subscribe, 5-star rating.
We or nailed 5-star warning.
But yeah.
Maybe that's what we'll call our podcast.
5-star warning.
Change our podcast name. Yeah. 5-star warning.
Warning. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Email us. Also,
we're going to try that silk thing.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do that.
I don't know if we'll have time before the next one, but we're definitely going to put it
on
the list.
I leave on Sunday.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Love you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.